Listeners may recall my chat with ABA President Steph Horner way at the start of this run of episodes. We mentioned Bear Vault and how they visited the sanctuary last year with a new product for our bears to have a go at. In this episode, I've invited Bear Vault sales and marketing manager Grant Bradenbach into the Bear Den to dive deeper into Bear Vault. In this episode, we had a fascinating discussion covering bear safety in the backcountry, the food storage triangle, the conservation mission behind Bear Vault bear canisters, and the rigorous testing by bears that go into getting these certified. We also talk about their new product, the BV1 canister, and how proper bear-resistant food storage plays a critical role in reducing human-bear conflict. So, without further ado. There is a place in the remote northwoods of Minnesota, North America. It's located near the town of Orr, population approximately 300. Outside of this town is an area where normal rules are put to one side. It's a place where humans and wildlife meet. It's a special place, wholly unique and not without its controversies. This is the Vinschuti Wildlife Sanctuary, run by the American Bear Association, ABA for short. The ABA is dedicated to promoting a better understanding of black bears and all wildlife through education, observation, and experience. I'm your host, Philip Stubley, and welcome to the Bear Den. So hi, Grant. Well, how are you doing today?
Very good, Philip. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today.
Not a problem. It's always a pleasure to have new voices on the podcast. So just out of interest, where are you speaking to us from? Because we get people from all over in the Bear Den, so it's nice to know whereabouts you are.
Yeah, calling in today from just outside of Boulder, Colorado. This is where Bear Vault is headquartered and where we do all of the final assembly and quality checks on bear canisters that head out all over the world.
Oh, fantastic. So I suppose if you're based in Boulder, Colorado, you must be into outdoor activities and sports, skiing and things like that, snowboarding.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's a big backyard out here, really, you know, and if I'm not in the office, I'm usually backcountry skiing or rock climbing, or I love long distance backpacking and even trail running and fast packing. I mean, really, if it's some activity under the sun, you can probably find me doing it in the mountains out here. It's wonderful.
Oh, awesome. I genuinely think I've never met anyone from Colorado that isn't into outdoor activities. So
you'd be surprised. There's a few, but it's definitely the majority.
Oh, brilliant. I've currently got skiing on my brain as well, because we're going on a ski trip. We've sorted one out in a couple of months to go to Bulgaria, so I'm looking forward to
wonderful.
That
wonderful.
Yeah,
well, hopefully Bulgaria is having a better winter. We've been having just really an abnormal year out here in Colorado and really a lot of the American West with you know, really, really winter drought conditions. We've been having winter wildfire risk out here. And I mean, if it doesn't really turn around, it's going to be, you know, a concern coming into the summer. And I mean, even just, you know, food availability for bears as well. Mm. And it could be a concerning year for human bear conflict, even if it doesn't change. So it's been disappointing for skiing, but potentially concerning beyond that out here. So I hope you're getting better snow in Europe this year.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, from the sounds of it, it's going well. But yeah, I know what you mean about the seasons are just all out of sync slightly, and you never quite know what to expect at the minute. It's interesting times, to put it that way. Firstly, before we get into kind of the mechanics of Bear Vault, if you could just give us a little bit of your background, that'd be great. Like how you ended up working at Bear Vault, like what is it about bears that sort of capture your imagination? I mean, coming from the UK, where we don't have large wild mammals like bears, they're endlessly fascinating to me, especially the more I learn about them and the sort of the varieties of bears across the world. So yeah, that'd be great to hear your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Idaho and grew up outdoorsy, was working out there for a nonprofit organization that was working on proactively preventing homelessness rather than a reactive approach. Was awesome organization, but got to a point where I was looking for a career change, and I knew I wanted to be in the outdoor industry, but I didn't want to just work for any outdoor brand that was selling another thing that people don't really need. And that's why this job with Bear Vault really stuck out to me, because, you know, yes, of course, it's a piece of gear, and you know, it's a for-profit company, but it's really about seeing people have healthy coexistence with bears in the backcountry. It's seeing bears not be, you know, euthanized for food conditioning. It's seeing, you know, people having, you know, these wonderful, authentic, wild experiences in the backcountry that aren't ruined by, you know, a bear accessing someone's food. And that really kind of connected with that nonprofit background for me of saying, hey, you know, here's something that's actually making a difference, but it's in the outdoor industry. It's, you know, related to the things that, that I love, and, you know, that couldn't be more fun. So I've been here about 5 years now, and, just my love for bears has continued to grow throughout that. Like you said, I mean, they are just such an amazing species, and I continually learn new things. You know, rarely do I go to a conference or, you know, read an academic paper about bears that I don't come away learning something new and say, wait, that too, you know, or that difference, you know, between subspecies or in this particular area. And just, I mean, they are just such wonderful creatures that I think are so often, you know, as I'm sure you discuss often in the podcast, so oftenly, you know, misunderstood and underestimated. Yeah. And it's really cool to get to work in that day in and day out.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. So how did Bear Vault like come about? Like, what's the philosophy behind it? How did the like founders come to the idea like, oh, this is something that we need to make, like people need?
Yeah, so the story really, really starts back in Yosemite National Park and the Sierra mountain range in California, which really there's a long history of bears out there. Most of the history, unfortunately, is not positive. You know, there used to be amazing grizzly bears in that range. I mean, it's the grizzly bear still on the California state flag. You know, and for a long time, it was seen as you know, really just a large-scale tourist attraction. You know, they would set up bleachers at the dumps in Yosemite National Park, and you know, the bears really, really suffered as a result. And you know, in time, basically modern, you know, attractant management really started to come about in the parks. And, you know, that meant, you know, people properly locking up food in the front country and campgrounds. But in the back country, that was still, you know, kind of your old school, you know, kind of Boy Scout mentality, you know, hang a bag in the tree. But the bears in that area, and really just like the bears everywhere, have always been notoriously smart. You know, when they're food motivated, when they know that there's delicious, you know, human food and calories, you know, strung up in a tree, it's really not too hard for a bear to puzzle that one out and send up a cub. And basically, so into the 90s, you know, in Yosemite National Park and in other places as well, but they're basically the bears were getting into people's food, and they realized they needed some sort of additional solution that was actually bear resistant, not just a bag hung in the tree. So there were some initial concepts for bear resistant food containers, which when you boil it down, it's a pretty simple concept, right? It's a container that you put all of your food and scented items in. Good rule of thumb is anything you put on your skin or in your mouth that a bear might be attracted to, even if it's branded, you know, unscented, it's probably got a scent to a bear's nose. And putting all those things in the can, you know, putting some sort of lid on it, and, you know, making out of non-pliable materials that even a persistent bear, you know, ultimately will give up and say, hey, this is not worth my time, effort, and energy. I'm going to return to those natural food sources, and it keeps the bears out of the human food. And so basically back in the late 90s, there were a few kind of designs that came out for these canisters, and they got the job done, but they tended to be really heavy, bulky, cumbersome to use. And it was a real chore to bring it into the backcountry. And so the original founders of Bear Vault said, hey, this is great. We love the idea of creating a device that's keeping bears healthy, but there's got to be a way to make this a little bit more friendly for the humans also. And so Bear Vault was the first company that made a canister that had transparent sides, so you could actually see, you know, that hidden granola bar at the bottom that you're searching for, and also a lid that didn't require tools to open it. And the design has continued to evolve over the years. And as we'll discuss later, there's actually a really exciting new design that we've got coming out this spring. but Bear Vault has really developed a reputation for offering canisters that find the right balance of resisting bears as our first priority, protecting the wildlife, but also providing features that make it usable for a human on the trail.
Oh, fabulous. I mean, I know it's called Bear Vault, but I suppose you did just say wildlife. So I guess I guess other wildlife in general, it's handy for. It's not exclusively for bears.
Exactly. We joke often about the mini bears or the micro bears, especially the rodents and whatnot. Like in recent years, even where there are not as many, food storage orders, which depending on if it's the National Park Service or the Forest Service, the different regulations and laws for being required to carry a canister can take different names. But there's many places still where the Forest Service says, "Hey, it'd be great if you carried this, but we're not going to force you to bring this product along." And most of the Appalachian Trail corridor is like that. And it's full of bears, and we've continued to advocate for more canister use to reduce human bear conflict. But surprisingly, one of the biggest reasons we've seen hikers carrying bear canisters is not for the American black bear, but rather for all of the rodents that can be a disease vector, the mice in the shelters and whatnot. The can also does a great job of keeping those out. And hey, if that's what it takes for people to carry it, that kind of, additional species, we're all for it.
No, that's great. And is it airtight? There's no smell or anything that comes out of it?
It's a really good question. So no, it substantially reduces the scent transmission, but we don't even try to beat bears' noses. I mean, we know that they are just incredible, with all of those terminates in the nose and the olfactory bulb, and just
Yeah.
we know that their noses are just so wonderfully adapted. And of course the canister substantially reduces the scent transmission, but even the food residue on your hands, that touches the can, the bears can pick up that scent. So the philosophy is all it's more about, outsmarting the paws, jaws, and claws of the bear rather than trying to beat the bear's sense of smell. Because also the vast majority of people are camping in places where the bear, where people have camped before, right? And the bear has those places memorized, and once it's in those places, the bear has, great eyesight too. It might not be, 20/20 vision, but the bear can also say, "Hey, look, there's some food." So it's we recognize that we just can't really beat their noses. And so instead, it's, "Hey, how can we make something that's frustrating enough to get in that they realize they are expending more energy than it's worth?" And after a few minutes, they're going to leave it alone and, move on to seek other natural food sources, which is, breaking down that food conditioning or just, stopping that curiosity in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, yeah, bears, they love an easy meal. So yeah, the harder it is, the more likely they're gonna just give up, and then they'll learn, oh well, I can't do anything with this. I'm not even gonna bother. So no, that sounds
Exactly.
great.
In a lot of places, we've seen trail cam type footage of, bears that have interacted with Bear Vault canisters previously, and they know that they can't get in. And we've even seen, I mean, it seems almost anthropomorphic, but we've seen them just swat them over out of frustration, not even trying to get in. And maybe they're checking to see if somebody just left the lid ajar. But I like to think that it's out of frustration that they know they're not getting an easy meal.
No, yeah, I would think it's probably frustration as well, yeah. Just a little bit more on the canister there. What's it actually, you said it can be transparent. What's it actually made out of? If someone was to buy one, I guess, what's the kind of guarantee on it? Is it like a lifetime guarantee or
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
it's a specialty polycarbonate. Basically, it's somewhat similar to the material that bulletproof glass is made out of, but it's especially formulated to be lightweight. And it's this funny balance of, it needs to remain strong under, like a biting force is very different from, say, like the pumping force that some bears use. It has to do all of that. The canister still can take a little bit of a beating, even if the bear doesn't get in. Most times it's, it's just a scratch here and it's perfectly fine. But other times, the bears will really, put some dents in it, so to speak. And we stand by all of those products. And if a bear, really any wildlife, porcupine, mouse, elk, we've even seen elk mess with canisters. If any bear puts damage on the canister, we replace those free of charge for folks. We want to make sure they have something that's, strong and ready for their next adventure.
No, yeah, keep the adventure going, right?
Exactly. There's our brand line. You got
Yeah, I know it.
it.
Did my research. And yeah, and you did say it is worldwide, like it's available outside of the US, right? Just out of interest.
Yeah, so we definitely the United States and Canada are the biggest spots where that's the vast majority of our footprint where the product is known and we sell quite a few. That being said, with the recovery of the brown bear in Europe, we've been seeing a lot more interest in Europe and into Italy, especially Eastern Europe, Czech Republic, and Romania, places like that. We've been seeing a lot of interest in the canister. We've also seen a lot of uptick in Japan. I think a lot of people have seen Japan in the news lately with human bear conflicts. And in the backcountry, bear canisters have been an important tool there as well. And we're just starting to see some interest in Taiwan as well. So, really anywhere that there is backcountry travel, with wild camping or, backpacking that's not in a hut-to-hut system, but also potential for human bear conflicts, the Bear Vault's a great tool.
Yeah, well, as you say, Italy, Romania, Japan, they are the ones you're always seeing the headlines about. I mean, I wondered as well if you had any numbers, like don't worry if you don't, but like how often does a bear that becomes food conditioned, like how does that lead to it having to be relocated or euthanized? And I know in most cases it's euthanized. I just wondered if you actually had any numbers on that.
Yeah, the best piece of data that I have, there was a really good jurisdictional survey through the US and Canada from the IBA that was conducted a couple of years ago, looking just at black bears, which is obviously, by and large, there's a lot more black bears than there are grizzly bears, but it was about 2,000 bears a year being euthanized for human bear conflict. Largely due to food conditioning. There are bears that, may have been euthanized, were not necessarily food conditioned, but the data would say that almost every bear that was euthanized due to human bear conflict, there was a food conditioning component there. So that's a lot of bears, and that number breaks our hearts. And we would love to be a part of bringing that number down. Of course, many of those bears are in a front country type context, your bird feeders, your trash. Your classic attractant management, boneyards, things like that. But the backcountry is a really important location too, and many of those bears are in a backcountry context, and proper food storage is really one of the best ways to save a bear's life.
Yeah, and I was just thinking as well with that number 2,000, sometimes there'll be the culprit, let's say, but sometimes like several other bears may get killed as sort of collateral because they don't know
We often
precisely
see
which
that.
bear as well, right? Yeah, so I mean, even if it's making sort of food storage second nature to people, it's not even it shouldn't be an inconvenience. It should be something that they're when they're doing their checklist, but when they're packing their bag, that should be one of the top things, along with something like bear spray. Like it's going in there, right? It's
Yes, absolutely. Philip, we need you on our marketing team. It's really, we want people to kind of rethink their packing plan. Because often, they kind of pack everything that people feel are essentials, the things that get them, throughout their trip. And then they kind of walk up to their pack with this bear canister and say, oh my gosh, how's this thing going to fit? When, really the mindset should start first with, okay, my first priority is to be a steward of this landscape. And the bears, this is their habitat, this is their home. How can I be a steward of that? The bear canister is the first piece of that. Great. All right. Now that's taken care of. I also, thinking about leave no trace principles in the backcountry and things of that nature. Now, what else can I pack? But making food storage a priority and, not doing it just because, the park ranger tells you should, but because you truly have a heart posture that says, hey, I respect the wildlife in this space, And I want to do what I can to make sure that wildlife is thriving, of course, for the health of the ecosystem, but also so that whoever comes down this trail after me, when they see a bear, it's magical for all of the right reasons, you know, and it's this amazing experience that makes the backcountry what it is, and not a negative experience of that bear, you know, tearing up your backpack or something, trying to find a peanut, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. And well, you mentioned the Appalachian Trail there, and you've been advocating for people to use Bear Vault there. How does it look across North America? Like, are there sort of areas that are adopting Bear Vault more than others, and you're sort of targeting those areas that are probably more in need?
Yeah, it's a patchwork. We have a really good map actually on our website where you can go and view. Basically, in red, we have areas that legally require a bear-resistant food container, and then it also has overlap known and probable ranges of black bears, and then known and probable ranges of grizzly bears and you know, coastal brown bears. And that's for North America that this map covers. And, you know, we are always really encouraged when we see a land manager take the step to implement like a food storage order and require canisters. But often we wish it didn't have to come to that, because it often means that that's a reactive choice. Usually something bad has happened. Usually several bears have been euthanized. My favorite example of this is the Maroon Bell Snowmass Wilderness. Are you familiar with that area in Colorado?
I'm afraid I'm not, actually. No, I'm
All right.
interested to
Well,
hear about
you
it,
need
though.
To book a plane ticket, and it is just some of the most iconic mountains in Colorado, and really wonderful backpacking back there. It's a pretty extensive wilderness area, a few mountains over 14,000 feet, beautiful lakes. It's a wonderful place, but you know, they were having terrible human bear conflict. And it's only black bears in that area. But some really aggressive behavior, some people got drug out of tents.
Oh, no.
You know, food was getting pulled down every night. You know, it was a lot. And basically, you know, the Forest Service brought in a food storage order as kind of an emergency response. And they said, you know, we're going to take a really strict hard line here. Everyone going into the backcountry has to have a product approved by the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, even though it's only black bears in the area. And we can talk more about testing, but that's the gold standard for bear resistance. And within 5 years, the rate of human bear conflict dropped 98%, and it really went back. The bears chilled out. It went back to being normal. Of course, a few, you know, key bears were removed from the ecosystem. But in general, you know, with food storage, the area healed. So, you know, we're often engaging with land managers and our nonprofit partners, with folks like the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, to advocate for, you know, really pushing for folks to use canisters, whether that's through something formal like a food storage order, or through, you know, more informal means like education, to be, hey, let's be proactive about using a canister. You know, we don't, just because we're not hearing about a lot of human bear conflict in this area doesn't mean that there couldn't be human bear conflict here. It just requires a bit more habituation and food conditioning. And, you know, so many of these backcountry areas are becoming more popular, and it's really on that way to happening. And so we can save ourselves a lot of grief, a lot of euthanized bears, potentially people being hurt, if we do the right thing and we manage our attractants in the first place. And so it's very much a patchwork across the United States and Canada, to your question. But as a broader trend, when you look at it over the last 20 years, it's definitely moving in the direction of more canister requirements.
Well, yeah, and it's all, like, I guess, taking responsibility and ownership ourselves. And I was going to say, actually, it's nice to hear, like, you've got an example of, like, the Bear Vault canisters working, because I was going to say, like, how do you measure that? Because if someone goes out with a Bear Vault canister and then comes back without a problem, I suppose that's a win. So, but you can't really say
Exactly.
it was definitely my canister that has, made the trip. But no.
It's tricky. I mean, it doesn't make the news every time a plane lands safely, right?
But yeah,
So.
exactly. But no, that's really nice to hear. And I'll be definitely Google imaging Colorado after this.
Yes,
Like,
absolutely. Come say hi. I'll
yeah.
be your tour guide.
Oh, great. You're on. So you mentioned actually, well, I did have a note to ask about the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee. So yeah, it's probably a good time to segue to that because, like you say, they've certified Bear Vault. It's a requirement, I think you said. So can you explain like who they are and what sort of tests they actually perform?
Yeah, the IGBC is a really cool organization. Basically, it's a collaboration between a bunch of different government agencies here in the States. So it's got the Forest Services involved, the National Park Service. Those are the big two. But I believe there's also representatives from tribal government, state governments, the Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service. Really, everyone in a government role is involved. And the IGBC has a larger mission that is, really to manage the recovery of the grizzly bear through various defined ecosystem areas in kind of the western, northwestern United States. One piece of that organization is bear-resistant product testing. And essentially, the IGBC has maintains a list of products that have passed their testing. And the testing, basically, they have what I like to call professional grizzly bears. And these bears, it is their full-time job to basically get into products. And they're really good at what they do. And so there's two facilities that partner. One is the Grizzly and Wolf Discovery Center in West Yellowstone, Montana. And the other is the Bear Center at Washington State University in Pullman, Washington. And these two facilities, and there's also these facilities do other things for visitor education and bear research. But essentially, if you let's say Philip, you've designed a new cooler and you've got a really awesome cooler design and you really think it's gonna, change things and it's a huge improvement on other coolers out there, but you want to make sure that it's bear resistant. So they'll put your cooler out there, or in our case, they'll put our bear-resistant food container out in the yard with the bears, and they will put whatever the bear's favorite kind of high-value attractant is there. It might be dog kibble, fish heads, and honey water. It's usually pretty gross. And then basically, there's a video camera and a stopwatch, and the bear will come up to the canister, and as soon as the bear starts interacting with it, with biting it, clawing it, chewing it, or pumping on it, the timer will run. If the bear steps back or is just licking the can and it isn't actually engaging with it, the timer will also stop. And you have to accumulate 60 minutes of contact time with these bears. And they're really good at what they do. If there's a flaw in the product, they'll point it out really quickly. There's kind of a hall of fame or maybe a hall of shame of products, from all sorts of manufacturers that, it's like, yeah, this seems really strong. There's no way the bear's gonna, get into this, and then they'll tear it apart. And so these bears, if you pass the full 60 minutes, the product comes out. It still has to be functional, be able to open and close. If it's totally gummed up and jammed, that's also a fail. And then once that's all determined, there'll be an official review of the footage, and then a certification number will be issued. And if you have that certification number, you put that on your product. So Bear Vault products, if you were to turn them over, on the bottom, they all say IGBC cert number, have a pound symbol, and then couple digit number. And that is the number that most land managers are looking for in whether they allow a product into their park or not. The exact language and how those lists are defined varies a little bit from place to place, but these days in the 2020s, the IGBC really is the gold standard for bear testing. And it's always exciting to and a little nerve-wracking to go into those tests because the Bears can be a little bit unpredictable, but it's always an exciting culmination of, you know, if you have a new product, you do all sorts of computer modeling, lab testing, you put in front of some Bears that are not with the IGBC, and then ultimately you put it in front of the IGBC Bears and do you pass?
Oh wow. I feel like this is a reality show in the making. Like a
Exactly.
league table of these bears. Wow,
No,
it's
it's great.
fascinating.
And I mean they're fun. Are you familiar with Tom Scott, another British YouTuber kind of famous for education content?
The name rings a bell, yeah.
You know, he did a piece on the testing center in West Yellowstone a couple years ago, and I mean it went, you know, wonderfully viral. I mean people find this so interesting that you know there are bears and it is their job to try to outsmart the humans. And you know we all joke about the substantial overlap between the smartest of bears and the dumbest of humans, but man, the bears in these facilities are certainly on the smart end of the spectrum.
Yeah, especially when it comes to getting it food, I bet. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, nice. Oh, well, I mean, so okay, for instance, let's do a little scenario. So the canister's been tested. I've gone out and bought one. I'm going hiking. I've got all my kit, you know, I've done, you know, all the background stuff, permits, and told someone where I'm going. I've done all the things I should do. And then I'm in the backcountry. It's a multiple day hike, I guess. So I'm getting ready to go to bed. I've got my food items, they're all packed away or whatever items I would put in my bear vault canister. Where do I store it? Like, is it, do I sleep with it in the tent? Or do I put it outside? Or I know you talked about how hanging food in a tree, it's not particularly effective anymore. So like, what am I doing with this canister? Like when I'm actually asleep, because like you say, it's not airtight, so a bear's gonna know it's there.
That's a great question, Philip. Are you familiar at all with the food storage triangle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that.
So basically that applies here. And basically the idea is to create an equilateral, I mean roughly, right? You're in the backcountry, you're not getting out your protractor, but roughly an equilateral triangle. That is, you know, each leg of your triangle is about 70 big steps. So the three points of your triangle are, you know, where your tent is, where you're sleeping. And that should be at least 70 big steps from where you cook your food and, you know, clean your cookware and hang out for the evening, snacking and brushing your teeth and whatnot. And that area should also be another 70 big steps away from where you store your food at night. And that's again 70 big steps from the tent. So all of those three locations are spread out. So that basically the idea here is that you're creating separation between you and your food, so the bear doesn't get mixed up, doesn't mix you up with your food. You know, we see a lot of well-intentioned but misguided folks trying to use their food as a pillow, and you know, thinking that their body odor will kind of mask the food and that the bear, you know, won't bother them. And sometimes that can work, but it's a great way also to get a bite on the top of your head from a bear thinking it's accessing human food. And so the idea is creating that distance separation. The canister is meant to withstand the bear, so ideally you wouldn't even hear the bear messing with the canister in the night. You would come out in the morning and say, "Oh, look, it moved a few feet to the right. It's got a bite mark on it and some bear slobber. Gross, but you know, it's perfectly fine. I
I
didn't
wouldn't want to
even
wash it. I'd
know."
be like, I'd treasure it. It's like
Yeah. You know, but you're not having a showdown with a bear, you know, at 2 a.m. in the dark, you know, trying to get it to leave your food alone. And so as far as placing that can, you know, really you just want to avoid, you know, a steep ravine or a cliffside. You know, you want to avoid water, you wouldn't want it to sink to the bottom of a lake or a river. And beyond that, the spot is not super important. The bear might move it around a few feet in any direction, but because it's round and slippery, the bear is not just going to tuck it under their arm and, you know,
Okay,
walk off, never
that
to be seen again.
was something I was wondering, like if they pick it up or not. All right, that's good to know.
And the thing is it really wouldn't be in their best interest, right? Thinking that they're all about efficiency, right? For a bear, it's, you know, what can I do to get the most calories for the least effort? it really wouldn't be in the bear's best interest to take it off, you know, to their den, to get out their lab tools to decipher how the locking mechanism works and figure it out. You know, they're going to work on it in the spot where they encountered it, and that's where they're going to try to get into the canister. And when they can't, they'll leave it in the area. So I will say, one of my favorite places to store the can, if you can find this, if you're somewhere that's below tree line, and like most forests in the American West, and even really in the East too, there's always some trees that have fallen down. You have deadfall on the ground, and often you'll get kind of a triangle of trees where they've overlapped a little bit, and think of it as a little bit of a playpen. And I'd love to set my canister inside this area where there's fallen logs on all sides, with, you know, a few square feet in between the logs. And that way the bear can bat it back and forth in that area, but it probably won't knock it out of that playpen, so to speak. And, you know, you might have, you know, it rather than it taking, you know, 2 minutes to find the canister if it's been messed with in the morning, it's right there. So it's one of my favorite little tips.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was actually going to ask, like, if you had any personal experiences hiking with the Bevel canisters, any stories there?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. It's funny. It's, you know, it seems like as soon as you work for a bear company, the bears all kind of know that, and they avoid you. You know, I've kind of secretly rooted that, you know, one of these times, you know, my canister, while I'm out personally backpacking, will, you know, really have an interaction with a bear. And my canister's had some interaction with some pretty feisty marmots and things of that nature. But I still have yet to have a bear munch on my canister for all the nights I've spent in the backcountry. So they seem to know that I work for Bear Vault.
Yeah, I was gonna ask as well. This is just a random wonder. I'm like, raccoons, I guess they're quite crafty as well. Like, obviously, I'm just imagining with their hands, they're not gonna be able to get in either.
No, honestly, a lot of people there. We have seen some people that have taken bear vaults into areas that are not bear habitat simply for the raccoons.
Yeah, and it works effectively there, I guess.
Works great. Yeah.
Oh, good. That's interesting. What is the sort of feedback you get from most customers?
You know, most people really learn to love it. You know, I think there are some customer hesitations where people say, you know, man, this thing's, you know, it's not 0 ounces. You know, it is something that I have to change, maybe the way I've packed for years. But we find that people really fall in love with the canister, and it becomes part of their rhythm and routine. You know, for instance, at night, let's imagine you roll into camp after hiking a long day. It's 30 minutes to sunset. You know, would you rather spend those 30 minutes at sunset sitting on your can, eating your dinner, watching the sunset, or, you know, trying to throw a rock over a tree branch, you know, and it never quite seems to get where you want it to do, and the rope gets tangled? And, you know, we find that it usually takes people about half an hour to get a good, you know, tree hang, and even then it's not that good. And there's a lot to say that folks tend to overestimate their abilities when it comes to hanging food in trees. And so people have reported back to us again and again that, you know, they love the simplicity and the convenience. When you forget your, you know, when you check your pockets and there's that tube of chapstick that you thought made it in the can, but actually, you know, it started to go into the tent. You just walk over, you open up the lid, you drop it in, and you close it, rather than, you know, fuddling, you know, with ropes trying to get, you know, a bag down out of a tree. And then, you know, once it's there, people are sleeping well at night. You know, it's a sense of peace of mind. It's trip insurance that I'm not going to have to go out and, you know, interact with a bear that's trying to pull down, you know, a hung food bag in the night, and instead sleeping better at night. Plus, it makes for a really good stool at camp, and so, you know, it's kind of an unexpected little feature. And all that goes to say that the people that use canisters tend to be really positive about them. And once people start using canisters, they really don't stop using canisters.
Yeah, just hooked for life after that. No,
Yeah.
oh great, I'm sold. You know what I mean? But I'm fairly easy. What's kind of like the best product for a beginner, or do you have like a best seller? Like, what's the sort of price range on these things? Just for people
Yeah,
that are
it's a really
interested.
good question. So, you know, rather than think thinking about it in terms of like just starting out, usually the best way to think about the can really is how long am I going to be out there? You know, what sort of volume do I need? And, you know, we like to think about it in terms of like days of food. And don't forget about, you know, if you're traveling the backcountry with, say, a dog, you also need to fit the dog's food in there. And like we talked about earlier, any of those scented items, you know, the toiletries, this chapstick, cannabis products, medications, all of those things need to go inside the canister at night. But a good rule of thumb is around 100 cubic inches of space per day per person. So our line of bear canisters, until the new one that we're launching this spring, has been the BV425, BV450, BV475, and BV500. And essentially, the 425 is 1 to 2 days of storage. The BV450 is 3 to 4 days of storage. The BV475 is 5 to 6 days of storage, and the BV500 is about a week and up of storage in there. And that's really how we encourage people to think about it is, all right, on the trip that you're purchasing the bear canister for, how much space do you need? And it's a little bit better to err on the side of caution. It's better to have a little bit of extra space. You can always put something in that's not necessarily food, rather than, you know, standing there trying to, you know, break your granola bars into finer pieces so that it fits in, and crush your food into a finer space.
Yeah, I've definitely learned from experience, always overpack on food, always take more than you think you need,
Yes,
because
absolutely.
been there where you get hangry and it's not good when you've say it's raining and you're kind of like you still got a few miles to go. It's just not the best feeling in the world.
Exactly.
So yeah, you mentioned this new product which I'm excited to talk about because it's how you kind of got involved with us at the American Bear Association, which and we run the Vinschuti Wildlife Sanctuary. So I've just wondered like how you first heard about us, and then if you want to talk about this new product that you sort of tested out at the sanctuary back in late 2025.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, Vinschuti is a really cool place, and it's always been on our radar at Bear Vault. You know, it's just amazing. You know, all of the education that Vinschuti, the center is doing up there, and you know, working with people and helping people understand bears for the species that they are, and you know, demystifying a lot of fears. And you know, even our one of the owners of Bear Vault, I believe, did a big education workshop out there quite a few years ago, and
Oh wow, okay.
it's been, you know, respected and on our radar for years. And you know, we talk to so many people in the field that you know, have such a deep respect for the work up there in OAR.
Oh, that's good to know.
So yeah, we so essentially as we were working on our new canister, which was called the BV1. We wanted to do two things. We wanted to see some additional interaction with black bears, and we also wanted to get some really high quality imagery as well. One thing about testing at the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee facilities is that they tend to not be very good for photographs. A lot, you know, it's kind of a zoo-like environment, a lot of fencing and wire and concrete. Whereas, you know, Vinschuti, I mean, it's this beautiful patch of forest with lush green grass and, you know, mature Minnesota trees. And I mean, it's a beautiful place, right? And so we wanted to see how the canister would interact with some black bears, as well as get that imagery. And so we actually worked with a local photographer who's a friend of Vinschuti Bear Center, Stan.
Oh, yep.
And
Stan Tequila. He's been on the pod, so don't
yes,
worry.
there the audience knows. Yeah, what a legend. And so he went up there to get some video footage, as well as still imagery, so that we could, you know, kind of understand both of those goals. And it was great to have the product out there. It was fun because then just not even a week after that, we were at the Human Bear Conflicts workshop in Kalispell, Montana, and got to chat with some of the folks from the center as well, and talk about having the canister up there as well too, which was just a really wonderful experience.
No, that's brilliant. Well, yeah, well, let me know when it's available. I'll drop a link in the show notes so people can have a look at it themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that this podcast, when this is reaching your ears out there, the BV1 will be available. We're rolling it out on March 10th, and we're really excited about it. If I were to sum this canister up, there's kind of three big pain points we hear from people, and we want to make, that's Bear Vault's legacy, right? We want to make this as approachable for people to use as possible. If a canister is easy and seamless to use, people are more likely to take that into the backcountry. They're more likely to comply with food storage recommendations and regulations, and it's a win for the bear in addition to people. So the three things we often hear are that canisters can be hard to open, that they can be heavy, and that they can be bulky or take up a lot of pack space. And this can really seeks to address all three of those. So we have a brand new button design that's patent pending that is easy to push in all temperatures, regardless of whether it's cold or hot out. Even folks who have weaker hands or perhaps even arthritis in fingers or thumbs are able to open this canister with a lot of ease, which we're really excited about that, and that it's going to make it more accessible for everyone, and no one's going to feel locked out of their morning coffee. When it comes to weight, there's been some really exciting advances in material science, and we're using some new polycarbonate resins or materials that are similar but a little bit different from the ones we have previously used, along with some new manufacturing techniques to essentially put more thickness in the place that bears target the most, allowing us to shave weight in other places. So between the new resins, new tech, manufacturing techniques, and strategically mapping where it should go in the canister, we've taken about 20% off of the weight on a weight to volume ratio, which we're expecting all of kind of the ultralight gram counting type backpackers to really, really celebrate this one. But the last feature is the one that I think we're the most excited about, is that the canister telescopes. It has two halves, so it separates at the middle rather than a traditional lid on the top. And these two halves telescope into each other, so it expands and collapses. So as you eat your food on your trip, the canister gets smaller and smaller, or you can begin by packing it down nice and small to fit in your backpack. So we expect that people are going to be really excited about the adjustability of the size. So if you're listening and that sounds interesting to you, go ahead and Google the Bear Vault BV1. It should be at REI, or you can purchase it on the bearvault.com website. And we hope that it's a great tool for you to protect wildlife in your area.
No, that's amazing. And you can tell it's made by people who are going out and backpacking themselves. They're thinking about how this can serve people best. Oh, that's really cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about the sort of product and Bear Vault, and I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the bears as well, just the sort of
Yeah.
the different species. So obviously like grizzly bears versus black bears, like what the sort of different techniques you see them use. That would be really cool to hear.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Philip. And there really is a substantial difference between the two species. Basically, grizzly bears, it's sort of what you would expect. They know that they are bigger and that they are heavier and that they can use a lot of brute force. And their preferred method for trying to get into a canister is the CPR method, is what we call it. And they take both paws and they essentially pump on the canister, and they use that big shoulder muscle on their backs to exert as much force as they can in a repetitive motion on products. It's difficult to calculate exactly how much force is being applied for a variety of reasons, but we know that it's well over 1,000 pounds of force
Oof,
that these
wow.
bears are putting into the canister. Black bears, on the other hand, we almost never see them doing this. They are much more analytical, I would say. We've even seen some black bears that are some of the most intelligent black bears. They'll come up to it, they'll analyze it from all sides. They'll even almost kind of tap on it and find the spot that's the very most thin, And then wherever the plastic is the thinnest, or what they perceive to be a weak point, might not actually be a weak point, but what the bear perceives to be a weak point, that's where they'll focus, and they'll lock in and chew or claw on that spot as much as possible. So it's very different from kind of the brute force that you see from the grizzly bears. You know, the black bears also, especially like juvenile bears, juvenile black bears tend to have quite a bit sharper teeth, and they'll really munch, and occasionally, especially on our current line of bear canisters, you know, with a really sharp juvenile bear, you'll see kind of tiny pinprick holes almost in the lid, where they're not tearing the can open by any means. They're not getting any food or scented items, but they are, you know, putting a tooth into it. Whereas the grizzly bears tend to have these, you know, slightly larger, slightly duller teeth that, you know, they mar it, but they don't, you know, they're not really getting a grip on it. So often we see them resulting to things that are sometimes honestly a bit comical to watch or to take a photo of, and you'll see them just kind of tossing it up into the air, you know, and they can't really get a grip on it, but they'll seem to kind of, you know, sit on their hind legs and take two paws and kind of toss it up, and occasionally they'll kind of catch it, and it'll waft up a few feet, and if you catch a still image, it perhaps looks like they're using, you know, the Force in Star Wars or telekinesis or something, and it and often they have the funniest expressions on their faces, but that behavior really is no match for the canister. So we always kind of chuckle when we see them trying that.
Yeah, that's really funny. Like you've actually, it comes to mind. I know it's a different species of bear, but I've seen sun bears that when they're opening coconuts, you know, it just they'll some of them, you know, they get right in there with they get right in there with their claws and their teeth and everything. And I've seen other ones they'll pick it up and just throw it down on the ground and
That's
until it
amazing.
cracks open and then they get, you know, the juices inside and everything. Yeah,
That's
but it,
wonderful. Yeah,
yeah,
not to be underestimated, you know. I mean,
no.
like what how incredible to, you know,
Resourceful.
to evolve to understand. All right, here's how you get into the coconut.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to mention the Bear Vault website, which you said people can visit. I mean, there's a lot of great, you know, educational material and advice on bears and backpacking on there as well. There was one thing that caught my eye. It was this stunning piece of artwork called A Tale of Two Bears, where,
Yes.
yeah, like detailed the journey of one bear that's exposed to proper food storage and the other that's not. And it was very memorable. And I was just, I wanted to ask a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that project a couple years old now, but we worked with a local artist named Madeline Mathis, and essentially we wanted to conceptualize the idea of what happens to a bear that accesses human food versus the bear that doesn't access human food. And you know, that can be hard to sum up because it doesn't necessarily happen instantly. It's not like a bear eats a Snickers bar and boom, that bear is dead. You know, there's a lot that happens in between, you know, step A and step Z. And we wanted to approach that in a way that was artistically beautiful, educational, and also approachable. And so we had these posters made up through this artwork that really tells the story of two bears, Bear Ash and Bear Arbor, side by side, over a period of time. And one bear encounters bear-resistant food containers, and really that bear's life, you know, that bear's story is pretty simple and straightforward. It keeps on living a healthy, natural life. It has cubs. It does all the things that a healthy bear should do. And the people that see that bear in the backcountry have positive experiences, and it's memorable for the right reasons. In parallel, on the other side, in the other column, you have a bear that experiences human irresponsibility, and it gets into you know, some food just out of curiosity, not necessarily food condition, but you know, we all know that is part of the nature of bears, is that they are curious about their environments, new scents, new sights, and that exposes the bear to human food, and the bear realizes that those are easy calories. The bear comes back again and again, and it becomes more bold, and ultimately that bear is removed from the landscape, and there's a beautiful piece of art kind of showing a culvert trap where the bear is going in, and the land managers are are removing it from the landscape. But the last piece in the art in that column is not just that the bear is gone, but that the landscape really has changed and that people have a new fear of bears there, and that other bears have learned, perhaps the progeny of this bear, but other bears are now seeking human food, and the forest is different. And there's really been an expanding and spiraling effect from one act of human irresponsibility.
Yeah, it really succinctly lays out all the points that you made earlier, and I really encourage people to check it out. Like, I really liked it.
Yeah, please do. We'd be happy to send some of those up to the Vince Schutte Center. They're really fun.
If you're happy to send a couple, yeah, we'd happily have them.
Happy to. Yeah, I'll send a couple up in the digital file. That'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you very much. I suppose what's the kind of one takeaway you'd want listeners to remember? I mean, aside from getting themselves a Bear Vault canister, what would you like people to take away from this?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Philip, and I appreciate you just, kind of taking the opportunity to wrap it all up. And I think I would honestly bring it back to that poster and, think about things from a proactive, lens versus a reactive lens. The backcountry is such a wonderful resource, and it's amazing that we have this, especially in the United States. We have these amazing landscapes that are shared, they're public lands, but that means it's all of ours, and we all have a responsibility to be stewards of the wildlife that call those places home. Bears are, some biologists define them as keystone species, some don't define them as keystone species, but they're at the top of the food chain generally in the areas they are, and they are so key. They spread seeds. We really rely on bears for the forest being the way it is, and the places we love to recreate. One of the big reasons the way they are is because of the animals that call it home. And as humans, we have far more of an impact than we might think. Our trip into the backcountry might only be for a few days, but those bears are going to live there for 20 some years, maybe more, maybe less, but our couple days in the backcountry can fundamentally shape the course of a bear's life. And there's a lot we can do. There are a lot of choices we can make, not just around food storage, but also how we travel, how we camp. That all comes back to respecting the wildlife that calls that home. And I would encourage the people listening to not take that lightly. It's not a message of fear. It's not a message to be scared of bears, but rather a message of joy, that how wonderful it is that we get to share this landscape. So let's do our part to protect it. And food storage is a big part of that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't put it better myself. It's like you say, I mean, the biodiversity and the landscape and the animals and wildlife that live in it, they're the reason you go. So it's like, if they're not there, it makes it a much sadder place.
Exactly, Philip.
Yeah. Thanks again to Grant, and I do hope listeners check out the Bear Vault catalog and site, and it would be great to hear if anyone has their own experience using Bear Vault as well. So do get in touch if you have. Next time, I wanted to do an episode on the other North American bear species, polar bears, and I'm going to use a fantastic book as a springboard for that, namely Bearless Story by Elsa Poulsen. So you'll hear more about polar bears and Elsa next episode. Thank you for listening, and bye for now. The Bear Den, the American Bear Association podcast, was written and presented by me, Philip Stubley. The music was composed by React Music. Thank you to everyone who has helped make this podcast possible, including Karen Hauserman, Bill Lee, Clary Lee, Stephanie Horner, Donna Brazinka, Ross Coyer, and Angie Page. You can find out more about the American Bear Association at americanbear.org. You can find Vince Schutte Wildlife Sanctuary on Facebook and Instagram. You can ask questions and submit comments about the podcast to pstubley@americanbear.org. The ABA is a special circumstance. We do not condone feeding wild animals. If you enjoy this podcast, help support the ABA either by donating, becoming an ABA member, symbolically adopting a bear, or come visit the sanctuary during the season and say hello. And if you do enjoy this, please do us a favour. It'll barely take you a minute. On whatever platform you're listening to this on, please either follow us or click the bell for updates and notifications. Please share with family and friends and rate the podcast, as it all helps us grow and is greatly appreciated.